if I'm not there, it's just underneath the bar.
You're very good. Okay.
We're in the Castle Cafe at Black Rock Castle in Cork, and they've been very accommodating because we are using two iPhones, an iPad, a MacBook Pro laptop, and another laptop, and they're charging our devices for us as we go through Chris Brogan's email that he sent a couple of weeks ago about platforms. This is my second audio booth. This is probably the fourth that we've recorded. You must also, well, I say you must, that's wrong. Here's a hint for you. If you go over to at Omani Blogs audio booth feed, you'll find several others. And we're discussing today an email that Chris Brogan sent about platforms, and we're trying to digest the very rich content in that email and apply it to ourselves. That is a little bit of backstory, just in case you're listening to this audio boo in total isolation, but there are several others on another audio boo account, Paul Omani's, Omani Blog, and my own. We are now talking about using your powers for good, and Paul and I have just had a very fruitful discussion. Chris Brogan says this, and I think he's absolutely right, and I think Paul agrees with me. Most people fail on their chosen platforms because they have the eye on one thing, and it is literally they have their eye on the eye of themselves. They have their focuses on them.
Yeah, so they're kind of, they're putting all their effort into projecting themselves,
yes.
Right?
Me, 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 me.
No, I actually think there's nothing wrong with putting a lot of effort into projecting yourself if you're not used to doing it. I mean, I just want to talk about one angle on this is, I know people who are lacking in confidence, right? And they gain confidence. One way of practicing gaining confidence is to do it on a blog. You start speaking, you publicize your own views. You say, you know, I went swimming yesterday and here's a picture of the swimming pool I went to and here are the strokes I practiced, and it's a personal diary, right? And you're projecting yourself. Now, I think that's a very valuable stage to go through.
There is also the fact that you have to inject something of yourself into your social media platforms because people need to be able to connect with you on a very personal level.
But you also need to practice finding your own voice, you know. I mean, we're all kind of, we grow up copying our parents, number one. I mean, they're the biggest influence, I'd have thought, at the early stage. So we have the whole of adolescence to practice getting detached from our parents. Yeah. Difficult for them, right? But you eventually get, and you get away from home, right? And then you adopt, usually, you latch on to some cause that you say, sorry, I'm going to be very personal. I latched on to a cause, and I immersed myself in that cause, and I became a very good propagandist for that cause. And I found a voice within that cause. But that was only another phase in life. And then you move to a stage of saying, look, all these people have influenced me. I think they're very good and all that. But the question then comes, well, so who are you? I mean, one of the greatest people I have ever known as a musician is Bill Whelan. He grew up as a great musician. He got into being a wonderful entertainer, right? He got into being terrifically good at curating other people's work and writing, what do you call it, what you do as an arranger of other people's work. But at a certain point of his life, the question he had was, what's my music? And that eventually led to Riverdance. So he had to find his voice. We all have to find our own voice. God knows when Chris Brogan found his voice. I'd have to go back a while to find that, but no doubt he had the same struggle to get there. So, okay, I want to say then, of course, that that isn't enough.
No.
Because once you've found your voice, the problem is not to abuse it. And Roger, tell us a couple of examples of how people can abuse their own voice.
I can abuse their own voice. Well, I could abuse my own voice now by taking over this audio boom and purely talking about what's going on in my life. I'll give you an example. I have to tread very carefully here, but for instance, and I think I'm guilty of this as much as any other photographer, a lot of photographers, we tend to be a little bit self-centred, if we're honest. I think we can all recognise ourselves in that, my colleagues and myself. So on our own blogs, we tend to post an awful lot of new photographs and then sit back. And really, really what we're looking for is for people to come along and say, you're wonderful, what a great photograph. So it tends to be that really all we're doing on our blogs is just promoting us, promoting ourselves, and just... But if you compare that to the blogs of the very influential photographers, well, actually, if you see what they're doing, is they've turned things around a little bit. They're trying to connect with you in a way that is beneficial to you, the reader, coming to the blog. So I think, just speaking from my own world of photography, that's a trend I've noticed, that most of us are looking to promote ourselves on our blogs. We haven't yet found a way of turning around and saying, well, how can I help you, the reader?
Just to chip in, there are a couple of really refreshing things I've come across in this respect. Seth Godin once wrote a blog post in which he was absolutely damning about the behaviour of some people who were trying to get me attention for themselves, right? Chris Brogan is much gentler in the way he puts it. But let me just read you, Roger, what Chris got a tweet from somebody saying, "Hi Chris, please check out my 3-part blog. The true key to success and happiness, right? Share if you like it." So, you know, you pick somebody and you send them your latest link of your blog post and say, "Please retweet Chris Brogan," right? If Chris Brogan retweets it. So what does Chris Brogan say, right? And this is, I think, worth sharing. "What do you think I'm going to do with this post? Nothing, of course. I don't know this person from Adam. I'm not interested, nor am I even vaguely interested in sharing it with my audience. Why barge into someone's conversation stream to promote your junk? It's just never going to be a good decision." Now, that brings me to the thing I find most helpful on this is dinner party, the image of a dinner party. Look, you go to dinner parties, and I don't care, they don't have to be labeled dinner parties. You go and sit down to eat with people, right? You've had God knows what going on during the day for you, right? It doesn't matter that you're a business person. It doesn't matter what. But you've been bound up. You've got all this stuff in your head. There's conversation going on already. Imagine sitting down at the table and saying, "Excuse me, actually, let me just interrupt you for a second and tell you, you know, the price of eggs in the supermarket where I've just been buying it has gone up from £3 a can, and I think this is disgraceful. The quality of eggs in my local supermarket is this, the quality of eggs is that, the quality of eggs is this, and I'm decided I'm going to another supermarket to buy." Now, the people at the table have been talking about where they're going on their summer holidays next month, right? You've cut right across them with stuff that you feel passionate about, right? You feel authorized to speak about, right? Now, that is actually what some people do on the internet. They send someone a tweet, which is an interruption in the other person's stream.
I agree with you, and I also think, it's actually worse. I think what Chris Brogan is talking about here is even worse. I mean, he's talking about somebody who's interrupting a conversation. We'll go back one step. Most people who are on a social media platform aren't even starting conversations because they're having a conversation which is in a one-way direction, which is, here's me.
Oh, it's broadcast rather than a conversation.
Yeah. So to build an audience around your platform, you need to inspire conversation. Conversation needs to run through everything you do. And I don't just mean you need to open up the comments and engage on the comments, and if you get a comment... I mean, here's one thing I do. Here's a hint. Which I found very helpful and very powerful, is when I get a comment on my websites or my blogs, certainly if it's a new person, I will email them directly back to say, "Thank you very much for commenting on the blog." I will leave a comment on their comment on my blog, but I will also engage with them in the email about what they've said.
Bloody hell, you're very engaging.
Well, but then the reaction that you get is quite remarkable because people really appreciate that.
That's real community building stuff, though, to send a personal email to someone who leaves a comment on your blog. I have never done that.
I find it very useful and very powerful. But I'm talking beyond just having a conversation in your comments. I think what Chris Stephanie is saying here is you've got to start a conversation even when you're writing your blog post. When you're putting it out, it has to be part of a conversation. It might be the initial step of a conversation, but what it has to be is it has to be something that it invites people to talk about something that they're interested in. And to be honest, unless you're a big celebrity photographer or a big celebrity blogger in whatever realm, you as the topic of that conversation just isn't going to cut it, because quite honestly, you're really rather boring.
But it's about audience, isn't it? It's all about, if you are in, and I preface this because I think people can use platforms in lots of different ways, you know. I think it's perfectly reasonable and legitimate to use a platform for intelligence gathering and you engage with nobody, right? You purely are out there doing competitor analysis, right? You've got a Twitter identification. You tweet absolutely nothing of any value whatsoever to anybody else, but Twitter allows you to use that to go and follow people. You follow all the people you want. Now, there was a time when I was very critical of that. I would have really felt negatively towards someone who did that. I don't feel that way anymore, right? But if we're talking about engagement and we're talking about community building and we're talking about building loyal customers, customer loyalty, we're talking about building loyalty, right? And loyalty is reinforced by people who are outside your control reinforcing the link rather than the leader continuously whipping people into line. Somebody who's very influential in a very big corporate the other day, I'm reminded of this, said something very profound to me in conversation. Well, in fact, to a couple of us in conversation. And it was this. They were distinguishing between functional or transactional loyalty, transactional stuff on your website. Transactions with customers, right? Somebody is coming to your restaurant, you tell them what time they're coming, you give them a special offer, you do this, that sort of direct stuff, which is a lot of which is done. And then the issue is how to move people from transactional relationship with you to an emotional relationship with you. And that difference between transactional loyalty and emotional loyalty, isn't that a very powerful, easy to remember phrase? From transaction to emotion?
I think so. And I mean, what it certainly what springs to mind in that regard is that a transaction can often be a one-off thing, but an emotional.
It can be a series. Yeah. I can have 50 transactions with a business.
But you're only dealing really with
developing an emotional connection with that business.
Well, but it's still only a transaction with one human being. If you develop an emotional relationship with them, an emotional attachment, then there's every chance that they will go out and draw more people into your sphere,
As soon as I get an emotional relationship with, let us say, my local restaurant, which I have, like Tick Cafe Beba, right, in Glenmire, right. I have an emotional relationship with that cafe, right? No doubt about it, right? It means that if the future of Cafe Beva were threatened, right, I would use all of my abilities to help it survive, right? This is not about getting a special offer in a cup of coffee. This is not about, you know, this is not about having the latest piece of a new invention of food put in front of me. It's different. And the challenge for us is how to move a business. How do you move your business, Roger, and how do I move my business from having transactional loyalty with customers, suppliers, to an emotional, a brand that everyone feels a vested interest in? I think that's what Chris Brogan is helping us with.
I agree. And part and parcel, I think, of that is that you are being useful in such a way that people want to spread that use to other people they know, because A, it's benefited them, but they can see how it will benefit others, and you've gained their trust. You've gained...
Use is a double hedra, again, two-headed woman, right? On the one hand, it's connected with functionality, right? And one part of the brain is that. So if I'm useful to you, it gives an impression of there ain't much feeling, it's about money, it's about this and the other. However, in a different meaning of the word uses, you know, nothing would be better than to be useful to another person.
Mm.
That is, to help them achieve their life's project, you know? I mean, if you help one of your young photographers in Ireland to recognize the greatness that is hidden within themselves,
mm.
that is waiting to come out, right? And you actually remove a stone out of their way. You remove a stone out of their way
mm.
so that they can then move forward more easily, right? You've simply moved the stone out of the way. You haven't pushed them.
No.
You've taken away a barrier, maybe self-imposed barrier, maybe an institutional barrier, whatever it is. Mm. But that is being useful to other people in a different way from the other way.
Well, I think to come back to the conversation that we had around photographers and their blogs, if you you can liken it to a door being opened, you can liken it to, if you're talking about you, you're blocking the door, but if you're focused on the other person and their needs, you're opening doors. And if you look at the photographers who do that, say David Hobby, who set up a very successful website, Strobist website.
H-O-B-B-Y?
H-O-B-B-Y, David Hobby, strobist.com. Now, he has made, I am sure, quite a bit of money. He doesn't actually care too much for money. I'm sure beyond a certain level he does, but...
What's the Beatles song, Money Don't Make You? I don't care too much for money. Money don't make you. Oh, come on. Oh, you're too young.
That Beatles, young. I know there's a...
Anyway, the Beatles have a song about, you know, money don't make you something.
But here's the thing. Yeah. So he set up a website and it teaches people how to use off-camera flash, off-camera strobes to create wonderful photographs. Now, he's built a community around this. He's built a massive community around this. So much so that his accountant said to him, you need to start a subscription model to your website. And he said, no, I will make more money if I give away my information for free. His accountant struggled to believe him. But what David did is he built up this massive community, giving away this wonderful information, helping all these photographers with their photography, telling them how to take fantastic pictures.
How did he make the money? Come on, I'm as interested as anybody else.
Well, there you are. Then suddenly, how did he make the money? Well, he started giving day-long seminars, workshops. And this is how I met him. I went to the first one he did in London.
How many people were there?
50.
Good, that's big.
50 at $100
a
head.
That's a lot of people.
50 at $100 a head, folks.
Actually, let me ask you a question. Could, if he had the right building, given the way he ran it and designed it, could he have taken 1,000?
I don't know.
It
wouldn't have been in the nature of the man. He likes to be able to communicate.
Did he shake everyone's hand in the room?
Oh, pretty much.
Right.
But to answer your question, how do you reach 1,000? Well, you produce a DVD series. He produced the DVD series of 1,000, the first one, and he was worried he wouldn't sell it. Well, he sold out the first run of 1,000 at $170 or whatever it was within 24 hours, very quickly.
He worked his ass off at giving away, right?
Yes.
And that was the thing. Now, he didn't give away enough until he'd given away an awful lot. And that's the point, I think.
Absolutely.
You don't... This is where the magical formula, Gary Vaynerchuk outlines it fantastically well, demonstrates it, and although slightly difference between Gary and the others, but this idea about giving away, right? It ain't a simple matter of, oh, in the month of July, I'm going to give away a lot of stuff, and I'll then get the rewards between August and Christmas, right? I reckon it is years of giving away.
Now, can I drag the conversation back to a previous audiobook, but this is very relevant to what you're saying, very relevant to an earlier comment that Mr. Brogan Chris made, because what were we talking about? He was talking about goal. Your goal with your platform. Now, when David Hobby started blogging, his goal, I am sure, was not to make a load of money. His goal was...
He mightn't even have had a goal to give away everything.
No,
he might have only wanted to give away a bit.
Okay, so he started blogging and he started doing this. Now, here's the interesting thing. When he got his website up and running and he reached a level of fame and what have you, he was made redundant, or he took voluntary redundancy from his job. Now, he would never intended, I am sure, that his website would provide the income that would allow him that transition smoothly.
Which country was he?
US. He's based in Philadelphia, is it? I'm hesitating now. So basically, he was in a position to smoothly transition from employment on a newspaper to being unemployed. That would never have been a goal of his. But anyway, that was just to bring a little bit of what we're talking about back to something earlier that that Chris mentions in his email. So, just to round off, I think, use your powers for good. Try and help others.
These are hints, right?
These are hints.
These are not didactic bits of advice. Right. These are pure hints.
These are purely hints.
Actually, can I go back to the door? And get yourself in the front of the door. Because as you were talking, I got this image about what can you do for a young photographer? What can you, Roger Overall, or a person in your situation who's already had years of practice at something, right? And what you're aiming to do is to be helpful to other people, right? I think in relation to the door picture, you know, one thing is you open the door for them, right? That's the usual one, right? I think there's something much more satisfying for the other person is that if you simply unlock the door, they have to open the door and walk through it, but you unlock the door.
Or even you give them a bunch of keys and they can figure it out.
All right.
Okay. But I take your point. Yes, I take your point. You're helping. This is an educational a way of empowering people. Is that?
You know me, I don't like the old jargon, but there we are. Whatever it is, it's about
whatever it
unlock.
Is.
Actually, you know, it's about. I mean, everyone is into unlock your own potential, right? Mm. But there is something about unlocking other people's potential, and that is often not by acting directly on the individual. I mean, if you create a community like Subcon, for example, as Liz Strauss and Terry Starbucker have done, right, which some people listening to this audio will know about, and if they don't, they can look it up for themselves, right? But the Subcon, SOBCON community, is actually now operates in such a way that if somebody stumbles into it, they can gain from it in so many different ways, in a way that suits them. And that doesn't mean that they have to be in direct contact with an individual. They can observe how the Subcon community works, sit back and lurk around it and see it and learn from how it works and make up their own way. Make up their own way of drawing value from a community and join the community in their own style, you know? They can be their own person joining a community, not feeling that they have to comply with anyone else's rules. In other words, they end up feeling that I interpret the Subcon rules to suit me, right? I don't know if anyone else interprets them the same way, but so your community, the community of photographers, it just has to be a good, supportive, generous place where people can say things, share things, be curious, collaborate, where the potential for action, this is not about, this back to Chris Brogan, one of Chris Brogan's key points, I think, which is, why are you doing it? Why are you building a community? And the best answer is, in order to, you know, change the world. And a subsidiary answer to that is, in order to find people you can collaborate with in order to change the world. Or in order to point people in the direction of other people with whom they can collaborate.
And changing the world doesn't have to be literally change. It can be changing a teeny piece of your industry, a teeny piece of your business that you're involved in. And that can be, I mean, you know, imagine if everybody changed a teeny piece of their industry for good. Well, wouldn't that be amazing? Hey, listen, we've got a little bit more to get through. There is the next bit of Chris Brogan's email is about curation. And that will touch upon a lot of the things we've discussed. So we're just going to work our way through that and we'll come back to you.
Lovely. I love the way you, that's a technique